The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Well, we got to get down to business.
Indeed we do. Indeed we do.
I won't just turn the car around. I'm going to shut it off. I'm going to kick you out, and I'm going to make you walk home.
Oh, God. I'm scared.
Your Ben Jarofsky Show for Wednesday, July 7th is brought to you by SEIU Healthcare, Illinois, Indiana, the Chicago Federation of Labor, the Chicago Teachers Union, and... Yeah, Ben, very excited about that. And Chicago Reader, chicagoreader.com for all things there is to know the city of Chicago. Subscribe, chicagoreader.com, tons of stuff. Go check it out. And you can help out this program, chicagoreader.com/Jarofsky. There you can be a bin head. Find out more information, chicagoreader.com/Jarofsky, J-O-R-A. V as in victory, SKY. It is Wednesday, July 7th, and live from my apartment and his attic, this is the Ben Jarofsky Show. Today on the program, legendary Chicago journalist Monroe Anderson returns, and it's the long-awaited return of Senator Robert Peters. And now your host, good Lord, not a senator. Chicago Reader columnist Ben Jarofsky.
Hello, everybody. Ben Jarofsky here. Columnist Joe in Crystal Lake Wednesday, and here's why. Because President Joe Biden went to Crystal Lake. That's why. But before we get to that, let me get to this. D, I'm officially thinking of turning my name to Senator. I kind of like that. I've been mulling it over ever since you said that, not a senator.
Oh, about 10 seconds ago, huh?
Yeah. I'm thinking of, like, from now on, people, I want to be known as Senator Jarofsky. Or you can call me Colonel. You know, I've always wanted to be a colonel, like Colonel Sanders. Colonel Jarofsky. That sounds good. Anyway, where was I? Oh, before I get to Joe Biden going to Crystal Lake, let me say this about that. Huh? Great night at the Hideout last night. So glad to be back for First Tuesdays. Maya and me and a bunch of lefties. A few centrists hiding out, taking notes. Let's see what these lefties are up to. Wonderful night, folks. Outside, it was kind of hot, kind of sticky. But every now and then, a breeze wafted in from across the soccer field across the street from the Hideout, which used to be filled with garbage trucks as it was owned by the city. The mayor, Rahm, cooked up a deal. He moved the garbage trucks to the south side and sold the land to a well-connected developer for far less than it was worth. And then pocketed the money to help pay for the redevelopment of the area. So whatever we, the people, made by selling the land the garbage trucks were once on, Rahm sort of gave back to the developer who bought the land. Are you following this, people? If you're not, don't worry about it. You're not supposed to understand these complicated transactions.
Okay, good.
You're just the happy little peasants who pay the tax bill. Now shut up and give us your tax dollar. Here, Rahm, take my money. You're the mayor. That's my imitation of an average Chicago D. Here you go, Mr. Mayor. I'm just happy to give you my money. Anyway, what would Rahm say about that? He's no longer the mayor. He would say, take a chill pill, man. Lori Lightfoot is the mayor. She's different than Rahm, okay? Actually, on the agenda for last night's show was the elected school board. Rod Wilson of Hope Center was there. State Senator Rob Martwick was there. And State Representative Delia Ramirez were there. They were giving us the ins and the outs. Man, if you really want to understand the Wheeler Dealers in City Hall and how they play the game of politics, you got to listen to Delia Ramirez and Rob Martwick tell the tale of Mayor Lori Lightfoot trying to undercut the elected school board movement. It could be a movie. First, she insists that school board members get paid, so Margaret puts that in the bill. Then she uses the fact that the school board members would get paid as a tool to whip up Republican opposition. Republicans are horrified. They're going to pay people to sit on the school board in Chicago? You'll never, ever, ever hear a Republican say anything about forking over $1 billion to a developer to build upscale housing in a gentrifying corner of Chicago, but pay some citizen to sit on the school board, which might encourage someone who isn't independently wealthy to run? Oh, my God, they're horrified. Completely cynical power play by Mayor Lori Lightfoot. Almost, it's so cynical, almost got to give her credit. Bill passed anyway in the face of overwhelming opposition from Republicans. Hey, Mayor Lori Lightfoot, you have to be just a little embarrassed when the only people you can find to support your position on an elected school board are Trump supporters.
I won't just turn the car around.
I will snatch away your elected school board. Anyway, great night. I want to thank Rod Wilson, Rob Martwick, Maya. I also want to thank Tim and Katie from the Hideout and HM on the live stream. I see you, HM, even though I don't see you. I don't have access to the streaming thing.
He's right there. Hey, oh. HM.
Turns out he's a DJ, D. Did you know that?
No.
He's a DJ, G. It's hard. It's easy for you to say. Anyway, that was a great night last night. I woke up to discover that President Joe Biden is coming to Illinois. Sometimes it's in a flurry over this. Oh, my God. The president is actually coming to Chicago. We must be important because otherwise, why would such an important person come to our little town? It's part of his victory tour. America, back together tour. He was in Traverse City yesterday. That's up in Michigan, folks. Eating a giant ice cream cone. There was a picture of it in the Sun-Times. They actually look pretty good. Made me hungry for ice cream. Now he's in Crystal Lake. For all I know, he's left already. I'm like, why? Nothing against Crystal Lake. It's in McHenry County. Peter Janko is from McHenry County. What up, Peter Janko? Democratic committeeman. Bob is from Crystal Lake. Who's Bob, you ask? He's the owner of the bowling alley I bowl at. I will now do my imitation of Bob. Here we go, D.
No.
Is that a good imitation, D?
Sure. That was great. I'd like to bowl there again, so.
What's your imitation of Bob?
Hey, come on there, dickhead. What are you doing?
That's way better than mine. Bob's a Trump supporter. I love him anyway. Everybody must have one friend. Monroe Anderson, our next guest, has like 10 Trump friends. I got one friend who's a Trump supporter, Bob. McHenry County is crawling with Trump supporters. So that explains why Joe Biden went there. Apparently, it's part of his larger strategy to assure MAGA that he loves them too, that he's not a Democratic president. He's America's president. Will it work? Are you kidding? You got a better chance of convincing Republicans that it's a bad idea to give gazillionaires a handout to underwrite the cost of building upscale housing in already gentrifying neighborhoods. You're not going to win over MAGA, Joe. But Joe Biden is apparently determined to prove me wrong. We got a great show today, everybody. Monroe Anderson is here. I'm looking at him right now. We're going to bring him on first. And then State Senator Robert Peters will be joining us, the state senator from Hyde Park. He won the seat that used to be held by one Barack Obama. But Robert Peters is to the left of Barack Obama. He's a lefty. And one of my favorite things to do is to pair Monroe with young lefties. The old centrist. He's going to explain to him how the world really works. Monroe and the lefties. It's always fun. Every Wednesday, I try to get a young lefty on with Monroe. Without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, the great Monroe Anderson. Welcome back, Monroe.
I'm not a centrist. I'm just left of liberal.
Okay, so if you're just left of liberal, then right. Technically you're not a centrist. In your heart, you're a radical. Okay, in your heart, you're a radical, but your brain tells you something else.
My experiences, life experiences tell me other things. I was ready to die for the revolution back in the 60s. Not so much now.
By the way, have you seen the movie about the, what's it called? The Summer of Soul. Have you seen that yet?
No, it's on Hulu. I want to see it. Yeah, right.
Speaking of the revolution, Gil Scott Heron.
They've been promoting it as the Black Woodstock.
Well, this will get into something. Monroe has accused me of saying that black people are superior to white people. That was a conversation we had about 2 months ago. Apparently, yeah. I see the world much like your wife does.
Yeah.
And, but, you know, it's kind of like when you compare anything, Monroe, I'm just saying, like, you're right. You had Woodstock in August of 1969.
Compare billionaires.
Well, let's see. There's Michael Jordan,
and Oprah Winfrey, Bob Johnson, maybe. Right.
He could be in the Trump territory. You know what I mean?
Yeah, not right. Quite exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Because he had to split it with his wife.
I did not know that.
His ex-wife, yeah. They got divorced. And she said, whoa, wait a minute.
But Monroe, somehow or other, when Jeff Bezos has to split it with his wife, he's still a billionaire.
Yeah, I know. Exactly. Yeah, right. Everybody's a billionaire. Both of them. You get a billion and you get a billion.
No, but in every step of the way, Summer of Soul is better than Woodstock. And I'm just being objective. By the way, we're pushing. This is something I really want to talk to Monroe about. I gave him so much homework assignments this week. People, the poor guy is overwhelmed. The Rachel Nichols, Maria Taylor showdown. Did you have an opportunity to read that story?
No, because when I was trying to look at it, I archived it some kind of way. I hit a wrong button. It's archived. And I don't know. I got to find it. But this was like now.
Oh, that's hilarious, man. Oh, my God. That's just so funny, man.
I'll shoot first and ask questions later.
Well, no, this is a fascinating little story that, I mean, it's politically... I don't know how relevant it is to the politics of the day. And we'll get into politics, Biden going to Crystal Lake to try to win over MAGA. I'm not quite sure it's going to work. Let's see what Monroe has to say about it. Robert Peters wants to weigh in on Eric Adams. So we'll hold off on Eric Adams being elected, winning the Democratic nomination to run for mayor of New York. Robert Peters, we're going to be talking about whether Eric Adams is a wake-up call to Democrats, as he says. Eric Adams said that. Or is it just a...
He and he alone can fix it.
Yeah, he's see. There's the inner lefty in Monroe right there. Okay, he would have been for Wiley in that race, the AOC candidate. And then, of course, we got to talk about how the Supreme Court last week. Monroe and I were on with Jimmy Coogan, ace attorney, and we were talking about the Supreme Court. Oh, they're really showing us that maybe they're not, you know, hardcore ideologues. And then, boom, the next day. Oh well, goodness,
Ben, if you will recall,
yes,
I theorized that they may be doing these small potato cases, trying to appear not a radical right wing, because when it got time for the big stuff, they were going to be who they are. And that's exactly what happened.
That's exactly what happened. They took a page from a football coach named Dennis Green. We know who they are. The Bears who... What did he say, Monroe? The Bears are who we thought they were.
Right, exactly. Right, exactly.
I'm messing it up. Sorry, Dennis Green.
Yeah, he's dead now. He doesn't care.
Okay, that's really it. yes, the Supreme Court on the last day will release their rulings. The day after Monroe, Jim, and I gathered to talk about how they were showing us little signs of independence. And you're right, Monroe. You said it was all BS, and so did Jim, basically. The next day, boom, 1-2 punch, 6-3 rulings by the right wingers on the court, essentially saying that corporations that there should be no laws restricting raising money, campaign financing, and gerrymandering is legal. not gerrymandering so much as election laws that make it harder for black people to vote is legal. So shut up, Dems, and here's your present, Republicans. Very partisan decisions, in my humble opinion. Your thoughts?
My thoughts are that the Democrats in Washington, in the Senate in particular, are going to have to face reality and kill the filibuster. Because if not, they're going to be in big trouble next year. And nobody's going to be in charge. They're going to handcuff a Biden, because you'll have a Republican House that they stole, a Republican Senate that they stole. And they will tie Biden up and then unleash Trump on us, or try to.
So I'm with you. And Joe Biden going to Crystal Lake, which is Trump country, as part of his effort to convince MAGA that he's their president too.
I don't think that's what he's doing. I think he's doing what Harold Washington did when the 29 had him all tied up. He went to various white wards and said, the sewer that you need replaced, I'm ready and willing to do it, but your council, your alderman, is tying it up in the city council. And then they would get the calls from their constituents. And that's how he got things done. I think that Biden is in Crystal Lake, and I haven't been able to catch up with what happened there. But I think that he got there, and what he did was talk about all the stuff that they want, the Republicans there want, and how the Republicans in Washington are preventing it from happening. And actually, when Biden talks about being bipartisan, what he's really talking about at this point is doing the things both Democrats and Republicans want out in the hinterlands. Mitch McConnell and Trump don't want that, because they want Biden to lose in 3 years. They want to get the House back next year and the Senate. And then they want to tie Biden up and then make way for a Republican. Trump thinks it's going to be Trump. I think instead of running for president in 2024, he's going to be still running from the long arm of the law. But we'll see. So I don't think he's going to be a factor, but it will be a Trump light personality.
Well, I have always said this about Chicagoans.
Yes.
That Chicagoans will vote for Richard M. Daley to be their mayor.
Right.
No matter how old he is, whether he's a sound of mind, whether he's even still alive.
Yes.
They just see that Richard M. Daley name and they go, oh, he really likes Chicago, and they vote for him.
Yeah.
And I'm starting to think that the Republican corollary, Monroe, is that MAGA will vote for Donald Trump even if he's in prison. The man will be in prison, and MAGA's he's a good president.
Yeah, they will. But they're the minority party, so that doesn't matter. In fact, the game they're playing right now is the Electoral College game. They cannot get the popular vote, period. In the story. But what they're doing is setting up laws. They're passing laws where they get to count the votes in the states that the Electoral College can decide who the president is in. These states that are on the verge of being Democrat or Republican, you know, the purple states are those states that can go either way.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. They're thinking, and they're already ahead of you, Democrats. Democrats, right. You know, you're still just so proud. I don't know what Democrats are doing, Monroe, but
this is what Democrats are doing. You know, I mean, if you recall in years past, I said that Republicans were back shooters and Democrats would try to have a duel at high noon. And that never worked out for them. So their current version of that is that the Republicans are lying and cheating and projecting while the Democrats are bragging about their policies and the things they're getting done. And unless they get down in the mud with the Republicans, that's not going to matter in the end. I mean, they keep hoping it will, but if they don't stop the steal, the real steal, stop the real steal that the Republicans are doing out in the open, then their policies will get reversed in two years anyway. So the Democrats need to be campaigning right now. And the way they need to be campaigning is to unleash Bernie and unleash AOC, where they're on the news various Democrats in various states where they're on the news all the time, pointing out what the Republicans are doing and what that will mean in layman's language, not in any fancy political gobbledygook.
I'm with you, and I hope Dems are listening. Half the time Dems are fighting each other. We'll get into Eric Adams and what that means, but half the time Dems are fighting each other. But what Monroe said is so absolutely true. The Supreme Court gave the Republicans license to pass any old voter suppression law they want, it's beyond voter suppression, as Monroe said. It's now like banana republic politics. It's like right. You install these flunkies to Trump who oversee the election process, and they get to decide whether votes get thrown out.
Right.
That's what Republicans are doing, ladies and gentlemen. Why you're snoozing, Democrats. Right. Republicans play to win. I don't know what Democrats do. Run around and lose weight. I don't know what they do, Monroe, but it's really remarkable that and the Dems are still writing these articles. Oh, the Supreme Court. Oh, they surprised me on that ruling about college athletes. Dummies, right. That right. College athlete thing is nothing.
Right. Yeah, right. They don't have any sons in universities playing on the big league teams.
Oh, Democrat.
They got the Koch brothers paying for children's college.
Ben, that was a really surprising ruling. Come on now. Brett Kavanaugh's not a bad guy, Democrats.
Right.
I'm with you, Monroe. It's they're setting it up. And so, all right. One thing that struck me was odd about Biden coming to Illinois. Yeah. I guess odd's not the right word. Let me just put it. It's so counter what's happening over the last year. Since everybody woke up in 2000 and realized that you can win the election but lose the White House,
right?
Which the Gore-Bush race taught people. And right. Then it was reinforced in 2016 when Trump lost by even less. I mean, by even more than Bush did. They've woken up to the fact that there's no need for a president to visit a state like Illinois because it's blue. And no matter what happens, you're not flipping it. You got to go to swing states. And so, Monroe, it's not just during the campaign that this happens. We see this when the president's making his visits around America being presidential. You know what I'm saying? They'll go to Michigan, a swing state. They'll go to Wisconsin, a swing state. They'll go to Pennsylvania, a swing state. Arizona, Georgia, etc. They're not going to go. Why would they go to Illinois? And yet, Joey B. Comes to Illinois. Go ahead.
Well, he's in Crystal Lake, which is Trump country territory. It's Trump territory. So he can make the pitch to the right wingers, the MAGA people, that what he's doing is better for them than what Trump is doing for them, or the Republican Party in general, who has now gone about sanitizing January 6th. There was no insurrection. There was no riot. Just a bunch of patriots getting together to express their love for America.
Man, you're right. Oh my goodness. And folks, I like to remind everyone, January 6th occurred on a Wednesday. And Monroe was my guest, and he had his TV on in front of him with the sound turned down. I've told the story a million times, and the look on his face, of I didn't know what was going on. I just was reading the story in Monroe's eyes like, I can't beep and believe this shit.
Right.
And then you said, I think, you go, Ben, you won't believe what's going on. And we closed down the show. I'm like, I got to watch this. But yeah, no, they're rewriting history. As we speak,
and just a little icing on the cake, Trump is suing Twitter, Facebook, and Alphabet.
For what? I mean,
not letting him be on there.
You know what? I did not know that he actually filed suit himself.
Yes.
Good.
Yeah. You know, yes. He's the most
litigious.
Is that the word?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's the most litigious man in America. I mean, he's been in suits all his adult life. Either somebody's suing him or he sues somebody.
Yeah.
And so now he's going to try to force the social media companies into letting him back on to tell lies, spread lies.
I'll just repeat what we said last week when Jim Coogan was on the air, the show with us. Not a sound strategy to sue one of the companies owned by some of the wealthiest people in the world. They got corporate lawyers. They got Lori Lightfoot types of their own. Right. So they're going to come after you. You sue them, they're coming after you. Right. They're going to open you up to deposition, discovery, as Jim Coogan calls it. Right. That's what it is. And so not a great strategy.
No, but nobody ever, you know, he's a one-trick pony. I mean, this is how he's done it, and he thinks this is going to work. But, you know, the thing is, back in the old days, back in the newspaper days, they used to say, the quote was, never get in a pissing match with a man who buys his ink by the barrels.
Yeah.
And this is the modern day version of that.
Yeah. By the way, I'm getting phone calls and texts from our next guest, Robert Peters. Happens all the time. He's waiting for his email. We're going to bring Robert Peters on as soon as he accepts his email invite to join us, State Senator Robert Peters from Hyde Park. Monroe, before we bring Robert Peters on and go back to politics, really got to pick your brain about the Rachel Nichols, Maria Taylor thing. Again, it's not politics per se. It's like workplace politics. It's workplace.
No, it's racial politics.
Yeah. That's okay. Racial workplace dynamics. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So let me just do the background so everybody knows the story. And it's basketball related, so I'm getting all excited. So Rachel Nichols is what they call a sideline reporter for ESPN. What's a sideline reporter, you ask? Excellent question. That's the person whose job is to roam the sidelines during a game and interview coaches at timeouts. So, yeah, they interview coaches. This is different. Then they didn't do this back in the 90s, the last time a lot of you were watching basketball when the Bulls are in it. And then after the game, interview the player who's the star of the game. It's a very prestigious job in the world of broadcasting because you get a lot of airtime. And airtime is everything, as Monroe knows, because he was on the boob tube for about 10 years with Channel 2. You're in front of that camera, that's power. So there's another job as the host of the post-game show. And Rachel Nichols wanted to be the host of the post-game show. Instead, ESPN gave that position to Maria Taylor, a black woman. So instead of just taking her lumps and not, you know, graciously and saying, congratulations, Maria, I'm here to help you in any way.
Being a team player,
because we've all suffered setbacks in our life. All of us have. We don't always get what we want. But you try to be your best, you know, you just do that deep breathing and just try to let those hateful ideas just pass in the universe. You know what?
Or say it to your spouse, but not anyplace else.
Yeah. So she gets on the phone with some friend of hers and goes, basically says, I deserve the job, but they gave it as a diversity hire. In other words, they're giving it to the black woman because she's black. And unknowns to her, her conversation was picked up by an ESPN recording device. She had just been finished doing a recording, so the device was still on. Somebody at ESPN heard it, and because ESPN cesspool that it is, they took that little tape and sent it around to everybody. And within a matter of days, Monroe, everybody at ESPN, gossip. Right. And it finally, the story broke in the New York Times. But you know, Monroe, when I read this, I'm like, no, it says making white people look even worse than they already are. Because the biggest assertion that black people say about white people in terms of white liberals, they say nice things to our face, but behind our backs, they are as bad as racist.
Rachel Nichols.
Well, almost as bad.
Yeah.
This is the citrus coming out.
Well, the old Monroe Anderson back in the 80s. Oh, my goodness. Monroe, what's your thoughts about this?
Yeah, right. My thoughts are that this is white privilege on display. Because she's a white woman, then she should get it. And if a black person gets it, then obviously it's because of affirmative action or something else. You know, it's also the equivalent of with women. Just we'll make it a women's issue for a minute. Not these particular women, but just a women's issue. That if a woman gets promoted to a job, she must be sleeping with somebody.
Yeah.
It can't be because she worked hard and has the talent and what have you, but obviously she must be sleeping with somebody to get that job. So with this one, it's not that this one, and I don't know the two women, so I can't comment on that. But it must be because it's a diversity hire. There is a movement to promote more black folks, which wasn't done for 401 years, you know. But since George Floyd got choked to death with Chauvin's knee, there's been an honest reassessment of things, and so there's an attempt now. I don't know if this is a moment, a movement, or just a blink. But right now, we appear to be trying to right some of the wrongs that we've done over the centuries.
Yeah. By the way, that's a good riff, but I'm not sure how honest the reassessment is. There is a reassessment, yes, right. I'll grant you that, but well, I don't know how honest it is.
Well, except no. What if you look at commercials? You look at you're now getting these TV series. I mean, the media is on it. I mean, it is some George Foreman is George Floyd, and it's some Black Panther. In that the Black Panthers was such a successful movie that Hollywood went, oh man, there's gold in them down here.
Yeah, no, I hear what you're saying. I've been around white people a long time, Monroe.
Yeah.
I'm going to reveal something here. And when a white person loses a job to a black person,
right?
I'm telling you, if they don't get into college,
right?
You know what I mean? If they don't get into medical school,
right?
It's like, that black guy got it. Yeah. And my SAT scores are higher. And, you know, I'm like, can't you just like admit that, I don't know, you just lost? You know what I'm saying, Monroe?
Oh, yeah. You know, and this is the difference between my wife, Joyce, and me, is when Joyce got accepted at Yale, to get her MFA, she gets there, and she is thinking that she got there because of affirmative action, and therefore was going to turn it down. When I got my advantages from Newsweek for being an intern there, I accepted it. I didn't care why I got the job. I just wanted the job and to be able to advance my career as a journalist.
Well, first of all, the real big difference between you and your wife, Joyce, first of all, she's an immensely talented artist, is that you'll come on my show and she won't. I just had to take that opportunity. Then I'm too busy.
She's smarter than I am.
But my advice, we're going to bring on Robert Peters. He's joined us. I'm going to bring him on. We'll shift it back to politics, I'm sure, for State Senator Robert Peters. But my advice to young Black people everywhere, not that any of them would take any advice from me, because why would anybody take advice from me? Who cares?
Right.
I mean, exactly. Who freaking, do you think some rich kid who gets into Harvard because his dad gave money to Harvard is crying over it? You hear me, Monroe?
No, I mean, yeah, of course not.
Hey, man, it's tough out there.
Right. No, and that's white privilege, is that, I'm white, therefore I deserve to be here. I'm white, I'm rich, my daddy's successful, that I deserve to be here. Whereas when, Harold Washington told me many, many, many years ago, obviously, since he's been dead as long as he has, but when I was covering City Hall, he told me that the difference between a Black politician, now this was back then, but the difference between a Black politician and a white politician is that if you're Black and you were running for something, then it became Black versus white. Whereas if you were any other ethnic group, particularly in the white community, then it was Irish versus whoever, or Greek versus whoever, but Black politicians were burdened with being put in a Black column, and therefore all the other politicians who weren't Black were white, and that was a disadvantage.
Well, I learned that. Everything I learned about race, I learned in Chicago. What a horrible place to learn about race. It's like a pit.
It's like Soldier Hospital, Cook County Hospital. You want to learn how to, the military sit there, medical people there, to learn how to treat gun wounds, because they knew that there would be plenty of chances for their people to learn how to fix gun wounds because it was so much shooting.
Well, if I needed a lesson in the fact that white people distinguish between Blacks and Jews, I got it in 1983 when Harold Washington ran against Bernie Upton, and all these white people were voting for him. And they would, oh my God, ladies and gentlemen, you should hear the anti-Jewish stuff that would come out of their mouth, but they're still voting for him.
Right.
You know, my God damn. And Bernie Upton actually believed they liked him, Monroe. You know what I mean?
Right.
I could have gotten those votes. I would just sit at home.
Yeah, no, there's one of the people from the South, West Side, said they were voting for that Epstein character.
Yeah, Epstein.
They didn't know his name, but they knew he was Jewish and he wasn't Black.
They knew he wasn't Black is
right,
the key.
Exactly. Right.
All right, let's bring on the distinguished state senator from the Hyde Park area, Robert Peters. Robert, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I don't know if I would say I'm distinguished, but I appreciate it.
Well, you're distinguished. Anybody who comes on my show is distinguished. And much to talk about with you about politics. Monroe and I were just having a spirited conversation about the politics of race in the workplace. We're talking about Rachel Nichols and Maria Taylor, and I'm sure you want to transition out of that into discussion about issues in Illinois and Chicago, unless there's something you're dying to say about that particular issue. Is there anything you want to add about that particular issue, Robert?
The only thing I'll just add is say that the way we view meritocracy in this country is filled with contradictions. And, there's a story about Clarence Thomas being so ashamed of affirmative action. And I think he went to Yale, I believe, and he refuses to look at his Yale law, degree. And meritocracy does not truly exist. And if you're Black, you have to live with that sort of double standard of merit. And I don't know, am I allowed to curse on this thing?
Yes, it's a podcast.
I'll just say fuck that, and we don't need to. I always, up until my mid-20s, I was always worried about meritocracy, and then after my dad passed away, I sort of rejected it because it doesn't actually exist.
No, it doesn't exist. Now, before we leave this, Monroe made a good point to me before we went on the air. And he says, really the only venue that meritocracy exists in is competitive sports. Either you can hit the shot or get the rebound, or you can't.
You got the numbers or you don't have them.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know.
And I would say, like, if you look, it what's so interesting here is that, and then we'll move from this, but Rachel Nichols, whose last name is Nichols, because she married someone who's the son, I believe, of Mike Nichols, complaining about meritocracy is, and the fact that someone did or did not earn something, is a type of double standard that just should not exist. And I think Monroe is right, you know, or you both are right, which is the idea of the moment that someone who has that level of privilege doesn't get something, they all of a sudden lean on meritocracy. Yeah. But just look at the school, you know, that issue with the rich parents who are sending their kids to private schools and cheating on the tests and all that stuff. I mean, it's just an example to show that there's something always deep down and Puritan or Calvinist about America, even if you're not a practicing Calvinist. Look at me getting nerdy and theological.
Yeah, don't go there. And just final thought on this one, folks: if you don't get something you don't want, and somebody gets it over you, and I say this from experience, you know what? Take the high road. Try to be gracious. You know,
that's so democratic of you.
I know. Don't be like Bill. Remember how Bill Clinton was crying like a little baby when Barack Obama beat Hillary? Remember that?
Yeah.
You know,
that's white privilege at play. You know, that's white privilege. You know, it's like they were supposed to win because they were white and there was no black president before.
Yeah. All right. Speaking of Barack Obama, he held the state Senate seat that Robert Peters now holds. So that's a perfect transition.
Yeah.
And Robert got a whole list of things I want to talk to you about. I'm going to ask you about elected school board. It's on my mind. It's a topic on my mind. We were discussing it last night at the Hideout at our first Tuesday show with your colleagues, State Senator Robert Martwick and House Member Delia Ramirez. So the House and the Senate passed an elected school board bill. You voted for it. You've always been for it, as far as I know.
Yep.
And Mayor Lori Lightfoot and the corporate leaders of Chicago are vehemently against it. When Rob and Delia were talking about the kind of shenanigans that went down in Springfield, I hate to say I was shocked, Robert, because I'm an old guy and nothing shocks me anymore. But I was like, God damn, it's so much dishonesty when it comes to political arguments. Do you follow what I'm saying? Like, they set up these phony issues about immigration, about salaries.
What is it? Strawman arguments? Is that the
term? Strawman arguments.
Yes. Yes.
So talk a little bit about the debate, as it were, over the elected school board and the politics behind the scenes on this matter.
Well, I mean, the first thing I'll say is what I find so fascinating, particularly about the Trump era, is how many people complained about democracy and representation and, you know, rules and the voices of the people, you know, and by the people and for the people. And, you know, Marwick and organizations and teachers and community members are like, we want to bring that type of participation in democracy to our education in Chicago. And people are like, we can't trust people to make decisions about their schools. We need some expert to like really overlook this. And sure, we have decades of immense failure, but trust us, you don't want more democracy. And it's just like, the fact that that is a thing that people do and they either know it and they choose to ignore it or they don't realize it. It always blew my mind. The argument against the expansion of democracy, particularly in education, after most people were talking about how great they are, you know, as a Democrat defending democracy against Donald Trump. And one way in which you can make an argument against democracy is by seeding a sort of reactionary distrust. And you're right. There were just a series of strawman arguments being made over and over again. A bunch of sort of political traps that they knew were going to take a long time to have to get done in the broader, you know, like in terms of where the public is at. It was basically to slow everything down to a crawl. Negotiations going here and there. I had no clue. You know, there was this supposed cone of silence. You know, I wanted to learn more. And, Martwick, to his credit, was like, I'm not allowed to really talk about it. And he was practicing good faith, except for some reason there was stuff happening to us, like, getting direct mail. And, you know, it wasn't mean mail. It was basically tell legislators to negotiate. But how would that have happened if we're talking about operating, trying to keep things a little bit inside, sort of mixing the ingredients before we're ready to make something really go out publicly. And then there was this idea of like the coalition was, this is something that you saw from the anti-school board people. The coalition made too many demands, except the fact that the coalition for, over a decade, basically, have been basically doing the same demand over and over again. They're not doing too many demands. They're just going to a thing that they've been putting out there for years. But it's always easier to punch left than to do what's right. And so I think the school board was really sort of an example of what makes people frustrated by the legislative process, what makes people not trust the legislative process and representative democracy. And I think it just goes to show that movements, actually building the power to elect their own people helped make the elected school board happen down in Springfield with, more and more folks who are bought into a movement politics in the House and the Senate. And I think to me, the biggest point of pride isn't just the fact that we're going to have an elected school board, but we can show that the progressive movement is not, we're not just a bunch of heady bunch. We deeply believe in organizing and movement politics.
Was there ever a moment, Robert, when you were listening to the debate? And I agree with you, it was a great straw man arguments. It's exactly what they were, arguments put up to be knocked down. Those nonsensical direct mailings that you alluded to, which nobody understood what the purpose, nobody understood the theme of them. We talked about them a lot on the, like, what is this thing? Was there ever a moment when you doubted, like the other side convinced you that, maybe they have a point. Maybe we should just continue to let the mayor have complete control over school board appointees and essentially control the schools. Did you ever have a moment of doubt during all this?
No, I mean, to be very honest with you, maybe Senator Martwick can shine a light better on this. I was very angry. I come from the belief that in politics, that when you try to play 4D chess and you try to be secretive and you try to look holier than thou, that you're so disingenuous, I don't really respect it. I'm like, put the cards on the table and may the best side win here. I trust our organizing. I trust our arguments. I trust our ability to get this done. And to me, it was like, if they're going to try to play all these games, fine. I don't care. Like, I was very much like, let's get this done. And there are some times where I don't necessarily operate that way. But in this instance, like, it was one of those things like where you could say, put it on the board. Like, dare people to vote against an elected school board. Dare Chicagoans to vote against an elected school board. Dare people who have elected school boards where they have their districts to vote against Chicago having an elected school board. And, like, let's put it on the board. And so, Martwick being, fair and level-headed, negotiated it. It's not perfect. There are people who have been fighting this forever who don't like the delayed implementation. But I was of the belief that we needed to get this done. So many of us, alongside Martwick, Senator Aquino and Senator Villavallum and Senator Villanueva, we all sort of knew that we need to get this done. I think the concern for me wasn't the other arguments being made. Like, I'll give you an argument. I'll point out an argument that drove me nuts that I doesn't get talked enough about. But the arguments about campaign finance. So you heard over and over again, capping how much can be spent in an election. But you can't do that. And a whole bunch of lawyers who love to, I'm not a lawyer, so they love to talk like lawyers to me. They, you know, they speak another language to me, seem to all of a sudden forget about the Supreme Court and Citizens United. And they kept making this argument about, oh, we got, you know, what about spending? And I'm like, oh, I mean, I didn't know that. Man. Me, a non-lawyer, remember Citizen United. I mean, I hate it too, but we can't do, what are we supposed to do about this? And then I thought, okay, well, if you're worried about spending, well, then you must be a big fan of publicly financed elections. I was telling people like, yeah, I think publicly financed elections are great. I hate calling people for money. So let's do publicly financed elections. If you really believe that money and politics is a problem, everyone should have publicly financed elections. So I'm excited to see all these people who were concerned about outside influence and money and politics, every one of them that made that argument to come out for publicly financed elections. And I'm willing to talk to them. I pushed this as an organizer. There's the New York style, which is a 6-to-1 match, or the Seattle style, which does a voucher system. And so for all these supposed experts who went after the school board over money and politics, I can't wait for them to drop a bill that gives us publicly financed elections in the state of Illinois. It'll be amazing. It'll be beautiful.
That's a great riff. It'll never happen. Monroe and I both know it. The same powers that be that are raising that argument about financing school board elections are the ones who pump thousands and thousands of dollars into the campaigns of people like Bruce Rauner and the opposition to the fair tax. So we all know where it's going. They're probably going to be giving money to Lori Lightfoot as we head down the road. All right. You mentioned New York, and this is a perfect opportunity to hold back on this discussion with Monroe to bring you in on it. Eric Adams yesterday was declared the winner of the Democratic primary for mayor of New York. He'll run against Curtis Sliwa. For old people like me and Monroe, we know who he is. He's the head of the Guardian Angels back in the day in the 70s and the 80s. He's a big public. He's a celebrity of sorts.
He's wearing his red Guardian Angels cap.
Yes, he is. Yes, and Monroe and I have in our closets our Guardian Angels cap.
Yes, we do.
No, but back in the, believe it or not, there was a moment in the 80s, Robert, when the Guardian Angels came to Chicago. I don't know if you remember that, Monroe. But
I know. They rode the train, right?
Yes. That's his big issue, crime on trains. Yeah. So anyway, I don't believe Curtis Lee has a chance against Eric Adams. But Eric Adams, as we've been talking about him a lot in the show, is a black man. He's the president of the Brooklyn Barrow. He's a former police officer, and he ran a very interesting campaign saying he was going to get tough, law and order, and he cared very deeply about cracking down on crime. At the same time, as a black man, he realized that police had often gone overboard, to put it mildly, arresting black people, beating them up, etc., and he's going to put an end to that. So it was an interesting way of walking a very delicate line, Robert Peters. He was elected, and he has said since he got elected that Democrats should wake up and take a look at my results and see that my results speak to the future where the Democratic Party should go. And I've been holding back on asking this question of Monroe because I want to bring you in on the conversation. So we'll start with you, Robert. Do you agree with Eric Adams that his election indicates that Democrats have to be heading on a different way on the matters of law and order and crime? Go ahead.
I will first say, I want to note that New York elected Eric Adams to be the Democratic nominee, and Buffalo elected India Walton, a community organizer, a member of DSA, to be the Democratic nominee, who ran on a far more progressive platform for Buffalo in a Rust Belt city. And I think what we're actually talking about is that a few things. Eric Adams is right, and India Walton in Buffalo, right? And I think everybody's right. People have concerns about public safety. And it's also important to note that some of these concerns are compounding issues in which the fact that in response, this is last year, in response to the BLM movement, there is a right-wing talking point about crime that has grown more and more. And that only heightens more and more people's feelings about something that they really actually feel, but then it continues to get heightened more and more. And I think at the end of the day, we do need to make sure that we talk about public safety. And that doesn't need to be law and order. I think what Eric Adams benefits from is a combination of things. Yes, there is there's a sheer identitarian politics that has to actually be addressed. Like we can't sidestep that. There's B, he's also an established politician who is really good at retail politics. This is one thing I've learned about the New York mayor's race, is that he is not, he's not a quote unquote outsider. He is someone who's been in those seats, goes to picket lines. He talks to people. Even if he doesn't agree with them, he's having a conversation with them. And three, he understood the issue of importance on public safety, even if you don't agree with it. And it's important to know that he did not get like 58%. He got a large enough base. He combined that together to win the nomination. I think that's an important part to all of this, is you can overread on his messaging, or you can look at the context of his history, of his reading of the moment, what he actually got in vote totals, and say, okay, what we know is that the public, they want to have somebody they can trust, right? Eric Adams is who Eric Adams is. This is another thing. Even though he might have some issues where he might have actually lived in New Jersey, his personality is who his personality is, right? Like he did the awkward, your kid might be hiding drugs under the pillow video a couple months ago, but that is who he is. So they want your authenticity on who you are. They want to know that you have some experience and that you do care about the well-being of New York, you know, of New Yorkers. But to be honest with you, this is a warning for every city of people who live in their communities who feel like they're having some issues with public safety and they want to see that dealt with. And I think that goes the same with India Walton. She has experience organizing. She made that very clear. She says she is who she is. And she spoke very directly on a public safety message. It was an extremely progressive message, but it was rooted in the idea that people aren't getting the safety they need in Buffalo. And I think when we look at these pieces, you look at that, you look at Larry Krasner in Philadelphia, Gassion in LA, what we're seeing is whether you are progressive left or progressive right, the argument, the concerns are you dealing with people's safety and are you authentically yourself?
Monroe, that's an interesting point that Robert made, a distinction between authenticity and ideology, and that authenticity in many cases trumps ideology. If you are who you say you are, like the Supreme Court is who we said they were, they showed that last week. If you are who you say you are, people would be willing, if they trust you, that you're real, they'll be willing to put aside ideological differences they may have with you. I found myself doing this, Robert Peters, with Eric Adams. He would have been my number two vote. And I only wouldn't have gone number one for him because of all my kids and their friends were giving me such grief that I fell for it. So I said, all right, Wiley would be my first vote. Monroe, do you agree with that authenticity trumps ideology to a certain degree?
That's a factor. I won't dismiss it. But, you know, he just barely won. So, I mean, you can't say, it really was a squeaker by the time they finished counting. I think it was 8,000 and some votes or something he won by, so in New York City. So, I mean, that's not a mandate. And no. he's calling it a mandate.
Yeah.
Because I squeaked through. This is how America is, and this is how everybody should be doing everywhere else. So, yeah. You know, it's the Buffalo election was more impressive as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, no, India Walton.
If we're going to make that sort of argument, then we ought to say, well, the Dems ought to be socialists.
Yeah.
being Republicans light, or MAGA light or something. Just go for the gusto.
That is a great point, man. He pulled that. That's very Trump-esque. Trump lost the election, Robert Peters. He got less votes than Hillary Clinton, but then he acted like he got a sweeping mandate to do whatever he wanted.
Well, I think that's a lesson, right? I think I say this as a lefty, is, you know, I one of the things that concerns me is being, and I get it sometimes, is being insecure in your political place. And I think that what I appreciate about India Walton, not only winning, is that she's shown some swagger and confidence. I mean, she's making statements that are just like, they're not necessarily bold for the sake of bold. She's not performing. She's just being herself while she says it, which is great because she's saying, I am who I am.
Right.
I know what I'm doing and I'm ready to take this on. And I think it's really good. It's interesting to see what's happening in Buffalo and what's happening in New York, because again, I think Monroe's right. What India Walton did is more impressive, because I think the idea is it's not just authenticity, Ben. I think it's authenticity and ideology. But what, and I think that what's important is that Eric Adams, ideology on public safety right now is a mixed bag, right? I think that this is, it is, and I think particularly for us, you know, for myself and a few people who are on the left, is we're trying to make the argument that public safety is not, like, the right does not have a monopoly on what it means to keep us safe, which is great. But now we're in a period as more and more people are saying we're arguing for public safety, that the definition of what public safety is to people is a little bit more muddled. And so if the key part, and I think India Walton says this clearly, and I think even Eric Adams says this clearly, is that when you talk about public safety, don't sound like some sort of weird nonprofit sort of academic mumbo jumbo. Be clear and direct.
Well, I could tell you,
and you know, what compounds has been is the shootings. And this is national; it's not just Chicago. But you have all these guns going off, and people getting caught in crossfire, and so that's the concern. And I talked to friends of mine who talk about the South Side and how it's going to be making this rebound. And I tell them it won't be making the rebound until they figure out what to do about the guns, because nobody wants to live where they could get accidentally murdered. And, you know, that's just, if you have a choice, then you got to get out of there.
Robert Peters, your thoughts on what Monroe just said?
I think that my belief is that the issue of public safety is actually extremely simple, and it's too politically difficult for people, or they don't ideologically believe it, and therefore it's our biggest barrier. I mean, let's just do Chicago. Let's ignore other areas, but we can get into that. Chicago segregation is inherently bad for public safety.
Yeah,
we use police as a blue wall for segregation. So we all these people who are like, man, I can't believe Trump's trying to build a wall. They'll also say in the same breath, honestly, we don't think those people should be in our area, though. And it's like you can't put up a sign that says so and so is welcomed here and then not at all really practice it. And I think so. Chicago segregation is a key barrier here. It's not just, you know, segregated by race, but it's race and class. It is poor Black folks, poor Latinx folks who are literally not only segregated off and walled off by a blue wall and by infrastructure. It could be a freeway, right? It could be a train walled off. Then at the same time, you've seen schools close, food deserts, low wages, disinvestment on the public transportation side, high regressive taxation and high rates of evictions, hospital closures. And then people are like, why doesn't anybody like respect anything anymore? It's like, well, society stopped respecting them. Why wouldn't nihilism set in? Why, like, what do you think is going to happen? And if you want to fix this, then you're going to have to build all the things that you've taken away from people's communities. And you're going to have to break down the racial and economic segregation that exists in the city. And when you say all that, you go, oh, no, it's actually really individual problems and nothing systemic. And I think that no matter where you live in Chicago, no matter your zip code, you're never going to get this figured out, because unless you truly confront that on a systemic level. And so I'll finish by my long rant. I'll finish this because I'm wordy. And I'll finish this and just say that people, ideologically, are more committed to public safety than people on the more reactionary side. because we know that the closer there's a hospital, a school, a grocery store, childcare, and good pay and a roof over your head, the more that's closer to you and your ability to get it, the more likely not only are you, the adult, safer, your child is safer. And they have, the other part about this is that the more that they believe that the community they live in is something worth fighting for over and over again. That is a fact. I grew up with a mom who was a raging alcoholic. My dad worked so hard to try to figure out how to keep us, you know, in, you know, to stay in that home. We moved from place to place because my parents basically just decided to live by debt and all of that. And at the other time, the only thing that made me even feel like, and I lived in Hyde Park, so I already had a number of privileges there. But the thing that made me care so much about my community was the fact that I had a friend who was able to provide me a place to go when I couldn't go home because I didn't feel comfortable for her, and taught me that that is what it means to have community, and that is what it means to look out for people in a time of need. And right now, what we have is a city, and this is because of 40 years of an economic and social program of neoliberalism that has shut the door so that when people need something, they don't have the home to go to, even if it's not their own.
Well, that was, I wouldn't call it a rant. I'd call it a riff. Go ahead, Monroe.
Yeah. Robert, what's interesting about that is that Leon Dupree, that alderman way back when, said that Hyde Park was the only community he knew in Chicago where middle-class blacks and middle-class whites got together to keep poor blacks out.
Yeah, that's funny because I didn't know that was Leon Dupree. I know that Adolf Reed, the academic, has also said a similar thing before. So, yes, I've heard that before. Sorry, Monroe, I cut you off. Keep going.
No, it's okay. No,
he was going to make that wise point. That line has been used by many people. Let's just give it to Leon Dupree. What the hell? He was a great alderman. He deserves it. It's a clever line. And it's I first heard it from a guy named John McDermott, my first boss here in Chicago, Monroe, who had he loved tweaking liberals, loved it. And he lived in Hyde Park, actually, good man, John McDermott. Anyway, Robert, I told you I was going to ask you about this, and so I will. I voted for Lori Lightfoot twice. Voted for her twice. Monroe's nodding. He goes, "You remember, yeah." She came to the hideout, told me everything my little lefty heart wanted to hear, and she hasn't done any of it. So I'm as dumb as every other Chicagoan I make fun of, Robert Peters. I'm disappointed, to put it mildly, with Lori Lightfoot's first 2 years in office. And I say this knowing, I could just see Monroe about to say this. I know, I realize that she got hit with a wicked curveball with the pandemic. So I acknowledge that.
And the $2 billion debt or whatever it is, however many dollars it is, obscene amount of money.
Well, every mayor just deals with that by kicking a can down the road. But anyway, what's been your attitude about your thoughts on Lori Lightfoot's first 2 years in office as our mayor?
Oh my God. And you're asking me a question where a few people are definitely going to be like, Jesus. I have friends on both sides. The way I will put it, is that, let me first start off. I like talking to the mayor, about things like sports or life. You can tell that she really enjoys those things. I'm sure similarly she would have, I bet, amazing hot takes on movies that I would, like to talk to her about. But I think that one of the more difficult pieces with the mayor is... And I say this is that she has power. Everyone knows she has power. You're the mayor of Chicago. You are powerful. You don't need to prove it to anybody that you are powerful, that you can fuck with any of us at any moment. You don't need to show it to people. You don't need to brag to people. You have it. And one of the things that is difficult is that she feels the need to show you up. She feels the need to show people that she's given it to them. I don't know where that comes from. That's not for me.
Insecurity. That's a sign of insecurity. Like you use a little pop psychology. Just, you know, she's short, she's lesbian, she's black, and she's taken a lot of punishment, prejudice over the years because of those factors. And she's had to show people back then. So that's her default position right now. I mean, it will be the rest of her life. I don't think she's going to change.
I mean, I get it. It's difficult. I mean, I got asked pretty recently, and I can't remember who or when. I think I got asked if I got bullied when I was in high school and grade school. And I was like, fuck yes, I got bullied so much. What are you talking about? Too. Have you seen me? I walk funny. I talk funny. I was not the smartest person in the world. I'm really good at throwing a football, but if you're trying to get me to run, it's not going to be fast. I was like, I got my ass beat. I was like, and the thing I learned, it's like a thing when you get bullied, there's a few things that happen. It's A, you say, I'm going to become so powerful, I'm going to show you who's boss. Or B, which I've perfected the art of, is that you have a really good sense of humor and you try to joke. When you meet the bully, in Catholic school, when the big football player came up to me and they book checked me, I would make some short and stupid joke to be like, leave me alone. And you develop these sort of things. And the key part for me is, and it took me a long time to get there, is I know it, I get it, I feel it, and I don't give a shit. You know, like that is, I am who I am. I was someone who was bullied. I have a biting sense of humor because of it. Sometimes it can actually go bad. It can go south with people and make a joke and people don't like it. And I have to realize that. And I have to apologize for that. And I think that out of everything, not just on a, you know, policy side of things. And I get it. You know, we've had Daly and Rahm, and you know, they weren't known for having the softest touch. They weren't known as the most approachable people here. And so there's a lot of things here in which a lot of men who were assholes at press conferences or assholes during on the political side of things got away with it in some way, not fully. I think Rahm spinned it to look like an example of leadership. That definitely ruffled people enough to the point where he had a runoff in 2015. But the other part about this is sometimes you are the mayor, you are powerful. We all know you have the capability of showing us how much power you have. I know for a fact, I would not be surprised if she just doesn't like me and I have to deal with those consequences and I have to make those decisions. She's the mayor. Got in with a huge majority. She has a strong base. I have to think before I say things like this, mm-hmm. What's the impact here? And you know what? That's power. That is power. When someone has to when you can live in someone's head, even for the smallest second, you have power. And to me, I think that's ultimately the things that I find to be an issue. And, you know, I think, you know, I had a tweet spat on Twitter that got in the Tribune about her at a basketball game and I saw her act and I tweeted about it because she kind of threatened political retribution against people who support an elected school board and then tried to talk about democracy prevailing. And it's just, let's just chill. All right. We got a lot going on in the city. Let's chill. Let's get it done. Let's grind it out. People are scared about getting shot. They're worried about their, you know, the water they drink, and let's just get through that. And let's not try to be the people who are trying to flex on people all the time. It's too much going on. We're all too exhausted and we got big.
Robert, someone, I was going to just steal this line, Monroe. Someone told me something today, very insightful, but my conscience will not allow me to steal this line. So the person who told me this was Robert Peters before we went on the air. Robert, I was going to steal your line, okay? But I couldn't do it.
I just could not do it.
You can do it.
He's more comfortable stealing mine, Robert.
He's just a good artist.
I just take people's lines, man.
I appreciate he knows a good lie when he hears
that. That's by the way, there's more to it than that's an art in itself, knowing a good line. But Robert Peters told me this today, Monroe.
Yes.
And I wrote it down when he said it. He was going on one of these riffs that he goes on. And he was talking about Rahm, everybody knows. I totally opposed every freaking thing he did as mayor, pretty much. Terrible mayor, in my humble opinion. Rahm had a reputation for being a total asshole. But that was not so much based on public displays of assholeism, if there is such a word, as in the carefully manipulated leaking of anecdotes about how he behaved behind the scenes. And so he built this reputation for himself as being this just cutthroat, diabolically evil, unafraid to do whatever he has to do to get something done. Machiavellian operative that the dummies in the city of Chicago just lapped up like it was, you know, M&M's.
I didn't say dummies.
What's that? Oh, I'm sorry.
I didn't say dummies.
No, he didn't. That was bad.
I don't believe that's a Ben Trotsky line if I ever.
Right. That's how it becomes his lie. He interjects a word and then it's no longer yours.
Nobody I didn't say it's true. Robert Peters never called the voters dummies. That's what Ben said.
I don't believe that. You already know we've talked about this over the last year. I do not believe that's a Ben Jarofsky viewpoint, not a Peters viewpoint. All right, back to you, Ben.
All right. But anyway, I'm like, that is so true, minus the dummy line. That is so true, Monroe. Think about it. So Rahm didn't have to do. Lori Lightfoot feels compelled to come off the podium and confront Jeanette Taylor. By the way, you should apologize to Alderwoman Taylor, Mayor Lightfoot. You know you're out of bounds. She feels compelled to do that. Rahm didn't have to do that because he had manufactured 20 years spending manufacturing this BS. I don't know, this image of himself as this tough guy. And so what do you think about that, Monroe? I think that's pretty insightful. What do you think?
And I think it is, you know, but this is why Trump has his appeal also, is that people want a strong leader. They don't want somebody that's wishy-washy. You know, they talk about authentic. They want somebody that they feel they know where they're coming from and what they're going to do. If they like what they see, that's what they want. And so Rahm had his group. We weren't among it. Trump has his. We're not among those. Harold had his. We were there, but he's dead. So we're looking for another meeting people like us. I'm looking for a leader like that from a progressive point of view.
I also will add that I think that Rahm's playbook is very much something that you see in D.C., which is, I think people do it here, but they do it very well in D.C., which is, you know, publicly, you're like, I'm trying to work with people. And look at them. Look, they're not being reasonable. Look at me. I'm trying. That's my thing. I work a deal. I'm the deal guy. And then, you know, leaked information will be like, he told them that they're going to fucking take this deal. And that was that. That's how he crafted that. That's a DC developed. And he knew that narrative. And the thing that I would say about Lori that I've always, this is my feeling, and it goes with a lot of people, is that generally, and this isn't just her, just federal prosecutors and prosecutors in general aren't known to like to go to court. They hate court. Court sucks. If they could get the deal done and they could bully you into the deal, you know, as I like to say, the plea deal, before they ever get you to go to court, that's their thing. So the very idea of having to go to court is nightmarish. It you know, so it's like, you're an idiot, take the deal, blah, blah, blah. And I think that it's just a different style and a different approach, and it works. One works very well in one space and one doesn't work in, you know, and it doesn't work in other spaces. And I think that's a thing that we see, and I think that's a thing that exists a lot, is that, and this is, you know, I say this a lot about work, as an organizer and legislators, I always say, take them to court. If they don't look like they're going to be comfortable in that arena, then take them to that arena. I can't believe I'm saying this out loud right now.
I can't believe it either.
We'll blame it on Ben.
Jesus. Just take them to court. Like, anybody thinks they're the smartest, best person, they do that all the time, cool. Let's take it to another arena. Let's do it. And I think that's a thing that what we're looking at is that a lot of people are saying, we're going to take you to the space, and, you know, it's not the most comfortable.
Yeah, well, that's a good a place to end the conversation. Take it to court. Don't take me to court, anybody. Anyway, Robert Peters, I had to give you credit for that line, because I probably will quote it in my next column, because I'm going to be addressing this. I find it interesting, and it's true. I'm pretty much the only one who calls the citizens of Chicago dummies or whatever for having elected, how many times did they vote for Mayor Daley? 5 times, Monroe? Rahm, twice for Rahm. Oh my God. He put the sweater on. Come on, Robert. You know, somewhere in the back of your mind, when you think about Rahm putting that sweater on, and people, oh, I kind of like him with the sweater. You know, that's, come on, Robert Peters.
No, you have to understand. Let me just point this out. Elections for municipal elections are ridiculously low voter turnout. Runoffs are even lower. And the other part to remember is that before, you know, everything that went down in his term, I mean, there was something we all somewhat felt, this admirableness. There was a lot of people like, Rahm has something about being tough and taking it on that is at least admirable, until it became obnoxious. And I think that for a good chunk of people that existed. The other part is, we realize that he actually isn't someone who's going to actually take you on face on. He's going to go through like 800 different channels and slowly stab you with them. Cause he actually, the whole idea of, and I think he crafted this image at his peak when he was chief of staff for Obama. And it was that scene about him he was at the club, and he confronted a Republican, and they were in the shower, and he was like in their face being like, I'm in charge. And he used that to be like, look at me as this tough guy. But that's actually not, I mean, if someone did that to me, I'm not going to lie, I would laugh. I laugh every time when I see someone do that. I'm just like, what are you like? If you're going to be a tough guy and get my face, you better really get my face. But if you're going to do this, like, what are we talking about here? So I just think that it's all facets, different plays. And I think this is those differences between Rahm and Lord.
Well, let me, you know, I've never asked Monroe this, so I'm going to put him on the spot. Monroe.
Yeah.
Listening to everything that Robert just said and what I've been saying, was there ever a moment in the 8 years that Rahm was among us, God help us all, as our mayor and a mayoral candidate, when you ever felt remotely attracted to his spiel and find yourself going, yeah, you know, I kind of like this guy? Was there ever a moment when it appealed to you?
There was never a moment where I kind of liked him, but I was impressed the way he developed the riverfront. You know, other politicians would have waited and gone through all this stuff. He just said, fuck it. and let them build, you know, it's good for the city internationally. You know, and he was a corporationalist. I wrote about that at the Defender. I've said it on your show. I mean, that's what he was, and that's what he did. That wasn't anything that I particularly was backing, but the whole riverfront idea is something that Mayor Daley talked about but didn't do it. The first Daley, Daddy Daley, talked about, you know, he's going to have it where you could fish, go fishing, yeah, go river. You know, Rahm pulled it off. I know this architect who moved to Kansas, and I had a picture on my Facebook wall not canoers, Kerouac. Kerouac, is that how
kayak?
Kayaking on the Chicago River, which they do now. Yeah. And this architect was on the board of the Friends of the Chicago River. And he said to me, he said, he's left town now, retired. But he said, this is how we envisioned it, that you'd be able to actually kayak on the Chicago River.
All right, let me just say this before you go any further.
Yeah.
Robert Peters, you should know this about Monroe Inner. He's not from Chicago. He's from Gary, Indiana. But he's been here so long, he's starting to talk like a Chicagoan.
And Gary is almost as much a suburb as Evanston. But for the illiterate that don't know geographically, it's a 7-mile distance between the
two. Hey, man, I border right there on the Indiana border. My district goes down there, and I used to go to the Gary Steelheads, I believe, baseball game over there every once in a while.
But my point in saying he's from Gary is that he had common sense when he was in Gary. But he's lived in Chicago so long, he started to sound like a Chicagoan. So the bar is so low with Chicagoans. Like, he built the riverfront. Well, look at I still have neighbors.
You don't think it needed to be developed?
So what? I mean, if I think of all the horrific things that happened in the city of Chicago, thanks to Rahm in those 8 years, and I balance that against the riverfront, I'm like, the scale is down here on the ground. It's like I got neighbors to this day, Monroe.
Yes.
We in the 90s, we had the Asian longhorn. Remember that? The beetle that infected trees on the north side?
Yeah, wiped out half the other.
Yeah, wiped out. And Mayor Daley goes, I'm going to replant all those trees. Like he literally was going to come to and roll up his sleeves and do it.
Yeah.
And trees were replanted. They cut trees down, they replanted them.
Yeah.
To this day, I got these baby boomer neighbors of mine.
Yeah.
Ben, look at that tree. Mayor Daley planted that tree. They'll vote for Daley no matter what. How corrupt he is. You know, the feds are not going to. Ben, he planted that tree. So I'm just saying, folks, I really try.
That's what a mayor who's going to get reelected does. They make sure the garbage is collected. They make sure the streets are shoveled in the winter. They do the things that people want done.
And then it's important to know that it's a Chicago tradition to not know what any of us are doing in Springfield, but to know everything about what's happening at City Hall. And this is why, you know, this is just a thing. I mean, this is being a mayor is oftentimes a lot of that stuff. We're trying to expand legislatively, but I try to tell people this. There's also a place that does a lot of legislative work. It's just 3.5 hours away from central Illinois, and it's called Springfield.
Yeah.
We can actually do a lot of good things legislatively for people, but you got to just pay attention to all of us down in Springfield, Illinois. We're right there. We're in your district. We're sometimes there. I know the alderman's there, and they might get all the attention. We'll be standing right nearby. And you might come up to us and you might say, are you that county commissioner? And we'll say, I'm your senator or I'm your rep.
Yeah.
And then they'll be like, can you deal with this issue on the street? And then we'll say, right there is the alderman. And then we'll look at you and we'll say, we just brought in such and such millions of dollars in something around healthcare, and you'll like it. And we just hope you remember our name every couple of years.
Well, Robert Peters, I'll say this. I'll give a shout out to senators and House members. And a lot of this emanates from the conversation we had last night with Martwick and Delia Ramirez. I don't know if the matter of whether Chicago had an elected school board was decided by the city council as opposed to the General Assembly. I'm not sure you'd have had the votes to pass it. If they were confronted by the blowback that you have received, not just from the powerful mayor, but from her powerful corporate allies and the editorial voices of both downtown dailies. And I think Cranes jumped in on it, too. So I don't think the alderman would have stood for it. You know what I'm saying, Robert? I don't think they would have been able to. I don't think they could have found the 26 votes to pass it. And they definitely wouldn't have had the override. So maybe distance builds backbones. Do you follow what I'm saying? You said it was in Springfield, 3 hours away. Maybe that distance enables senators and House members to be a little, tougher?
I'll just say this. We got a lot of amazing progressive things done in Springfield. I personally was able to get mental health first responders done, able to support the elected school board getting done, expand unpaid time off for people who are survivors of crime, violent crime. We were able to get so many amazing progressive things done in Springfield, and I'm very proud of all of us in the legislature. I'm proud, I'll say this, I worked against the governor, very proud of the governor for the work that he's doing, and I hope people in Chicago know that many of their legislators are doing amazing work to strengthen our communities and make them safer, and sometimes we may not get the attention. I don't always seek necessarily that attention, but what I do want people to do is to know that we're doing good work, that we're looking out for our communities. $300 million in affordable house funding is coming to the state of Illinois. Large chunk of that is coming to the city of Chicago. That is something that we did in the House and the Senate. COVID relief protection, that's something that, Senator Aquino, Representative Deli Ramirez, myself, Ghazardi, Lindsay LaPointe, all were able to get massive protections for people who are, risking their housing during the COVID-19 pandemic. And then on top of that, more millions of dollars going into housing to keep people there. I mean, this is, I will finish, I'll finish and say this to everybody. There's a lot of drama in the city of Chicago. There are a lot of things that, I see that I don't necessarily agree with, particularly on the public safety front, particularly the same old bullshit attacks on our courts and on bond from the police chief. But what I can tell you is that for all of us in Springfield and the past 8 months that we've had, including that lame duck period and the build up to lame duck that got the Black Caucus pillars done, is absolutely historic. And no other state in the country, no other state, this is something Illinois can be proud of, has done as much, particularly for Black working class families, as the state of Illinois. And the Black Caucus, the Progressive Caucus, and the Latino Caucus played a huge role in making all these things happen.
All right, we'll let you close with that one. Senator Robert Peters and Monroe Anderson's nodding his head. I think he sort of agrees with what you were saying. I want to thank both of you for coming on the show. Monroe, of course, every Wednesday. And Robert Peters, I should reach out to you more often because it's always fun talking politics with you. All right.
All right. Thank you.
All right. That's Robert Peters and Monroe Anderson. I'm Ben Jarofsky. And of course, I could not leave this show without thanking the man, the myth, the legend, the pride and joy of Alton, Illinois, who makes it all possible. And as Robert Peters and Monroe Anderson will tell you, back home in Alton, they call him Dr. D. Give yourself a raise, take it out of petty cash. See you tomorrow, everybody.
You have to be a good neighbor.
Take a chill pill, man. Take a chill pill, man.